This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
My thing was, what an opportunity for us as players, us as a league, being predominantly white, having a lot of the different backgrounds we have in our game, to actually be leaders and take a stand on these issues and be first to the party, not last all the time.
From earlier this week, that was former Winnipeg Jets player, current member of the San Jose Sharks, Evander Kane, speaking about the NHL and their tendency, I would suggest is the best word to use, to be a day late and a dollar short when it comes to social justice issues. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mindell, Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Minuke with you. We are live, of course, back in Dave's living room after a week off and front porching it last week, but pleased to be back here in Casa de Dave, and we'll be with you for the next 3 hours. We're going to obviously touch on the Winnipeg Jets. We'll touch on the Stanley Cup playoffs. But given the unprecedented circumstances this week where basically professional sports or a large percentage of professional sports went on strike, where the players said we are not going to be playing due to protest social justice issues and to protest against the ongoing brutality that is being experienced by minorities both here in Canada and in the United States, we do have to start with that topic on this Saturday morning. Good morning, Ezra. Good morning, Dave. It's nice to see you both gentlemen on this Saturday, the 29th of August. How are you guys?
Yeah, I think we're doing well here, guys. And, you know, I think, you know, this show is a little bit different than, you know, shows that we've done in the past in the sense that with what's going on in the U.S. and across the sports world, as you mentioned, Drew, you know, it has to be talked about. And I think, you know, the fact that the NBA got the ball rolling, no pun intended, in terms of postponing that game, the Milwaukee Bucks and the Orlando Magic. And then, you know, you mentioned off the top of the show, you know, there was that debate whether, you know, the NHL was a day late. And as far as I'm concerned, guys, that doesn't matter at this point. Because I do think they were a day late. I agree with Evander Kane. I agree with Matt Dumba. I think the Hockey Diversity Alliance needs to be commended for the job that they've done here in, you know, making sure that the NHL postponed these games on Thursday and Friday. So for me, Dave, it's not about, you know, if they missed an opportunity on Wednesday, because I think we all agree that they did. It's that they took a stand, and as Ryan Reeves spoke about, and I was very proud, you know, being from Winnipeg, you know, Ryan Reeves was, you know, at the forefront, right? Like, that story is famous at this point, right? Kevin Shattenkirk contacting Ryan Reeves, and then, you know, Ryan Reeves, you know, and other players reached out to the Hockey Diversity Alliance, and then they all made the decision that, no, we're not going to play games. So, you know, as it relates to the hockey world specifically, even if they were a day late, the point is that they took a stand, and they decided that human rights, as you talked about, the police brutality, Drew, that we're seeing in the U.S., you know, that means a lot to them. That means more than, you know, playing games. Games are going to resume today. We're going to have, you know, three games here, and we're going to talk about that. But I think not just NHL players, but NBA players, you know, Major League Baseball players, WNBA players, they've used their platform, and they've said that they want change and, you know, that human rights are more important than sports. So, you know, I'm very proud of what, you know, these players have done.
I think to me, the biggest thing is to make sure that something comes from this. I think that to just take a stand is obviously important, but I think it's the what happens after is the most telling. And I think, you know, if you simply make a stand for the display, you know, I mean, you're right, as the solidarity is important. You know, the NHL following the lead of other major sports. The fact is they did it. You know, you can say, oh, well, it's too bad. They lament the fact that they didn't do it immediately, but the reality is they did it. But now what comes after? What is the change that happens? And, you know, Evander Kane was talking to young people of color here in Canada, you know, trying to give them some inspiration and some, you know, I don't remember exactly what format he was using to discuss that. But to me, that's the most important thing that can come from this, because if you just take an action to look reactive and you don't do anything after the fact, well, then, okay.
You're talking about tangible results.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the whole point. Like, you want to see things that, you know, and we're seeing it you know, from an, I mean, this doesn't really apply to us in Canada, but from an American perspective, you know, the opening up the arenas in the NBA and now talk of some NHL arenas to allow for voting registration and voting, you know, rights and try to allow for...
to use them as polling places come November with
right.
the general election.
So there you're seeing a tangible thing coming out of this effort. And that to me is, I think, is what is important because you want to not just have something that, like I said, it's not like a sugar high where there's a short-term gain, but really nothing long-term. That to me is the most important thing that can come from this because you're right. It's a watershed moment really in sports. It's not something we've ever really seen ever before. So if that's the case, what are you going to do from here? Are you going to just say, well, look, we stopped for 2 days. That was sufficient. Or are you going to say, you know what? We did things from that that made, in this instance, hockey more inclusive to all people, not just, you know, one segment.
I think what's clear from my perspective, you know, after the last couple of days, is that it has to be a player-led initiative. Owners, and this isn't strictly about NHL owners, this is about basically owners in all leagues, are not going to take the initiative themselves. It has to be players going on strike. And again, it is important to use the terminology strike, not boycott. A boycott is what you do when you don't go to a place of business and you don't give them your money. A strike is when you withhold your labor. And that is what the players have done in all the sports, is that they went on strike. The NBA, you know, the NHL certainly went on strike later than all the other players. And I mean, you know, and I think the players probably felt bad about the manner in which they didn't, you know, was, I guess this was Wednesday, when they were the only league basically playing on Wednesday. I think the players realized Wednesday evening, Wednesday night, that they made an error. And it's unfair to put the blame on the players, but what I've seen so far is that it's clear that the owners are not going to be the leading. They're not going to be the driving force behind this. They're not going to be the initiative. I mean, the NHL's, you know, moment of reflection on Wednesday night was pretty pathetic. And that's why the players, I think, realized afterwards that they need to be the ones who are forcing the hand of the owners of the teams. And that's what they've already realized in the NBA. That's what they've already realized in the NFL. That's what they've realized in Major League Baseball, is that it has to be player-driven because owners themselves are never going to take the initiative to be the strong voice leading the charge. They'll fall in line with their players for the most part after the players take that initiative, but they won't be the first ones to go out there.
No, you're 100% right. And that image of, you know, Ryan Reeves, Pierre-Edward Belmar, Nazem Kadri, Jason Dickinson is the team rep for the Dallas Stars. All of those players, I think there was, I don't know how many there were, 50, 60,
you
70.
You couldn't even see the, I mean, there were players off camera.
Right.
So
it's
possible, even see,
you know,
how
it was,
many
it
were.
Was closer to 100, really. I mean, it looked like, you know, at least 50 players, right? But the point is that, you know, that was a very powerful visual, right, guys? And I agree with you, you know, like I said, that, you know, the players all have to be together. And, you know, that's especially for kids, right? Like, kids see players on the ice. They don't see owners. They don't see general manager. Sure, I mean, we see, you know, Chevy or, you know, whether it's, you know, Kelly McCrimmon, whoever up in the press box. But, I mean, the players are who kids idolize, right? And, you know, I think the players, guys, are aware that, you know, this is just the beginning, right? Like, they realize there's lots of work to come. And I was really impressed yesterday, you know, when you had, I think it was Braden Coburn and Luke Shen, and they said that they weren't going to talk about, you know, hockey on the ice. They wanted to keep the focus on what was going on in the U.S. with, you know, social inequality, and they wanted to talk about that, Black Lives Matter. So that was yesterday. I mean, that wasn't Thursday. That was yesterday, right? So you had players in the NHL that wanted to keep the focus on what's going on in the U.S. And we all agree that, you know, these games being postponed, whether it's the NHL, and obviously the NBA was first, and you have baseball, and we talked about it. They're basically across the sporting world, as you said, you had strikes, right? Not boycotts. You had games being postponed. So what's been happening across North America and around the world is very powerful. And I think it is something this, we've never seen this, guys, in the history of sport,
well,
at this level.
We've never seen players as empowered as they are now, right, in 2020, where you know, you see it in the NBA way more than in the NHL, but you see, yep, it where the players are dictating almost their own futures. Contracts, to some extent, be damned. You know, a guy has a valid contract. You know, he's, you know, in the NBA, these guys have been forcing their way to go to another team, even with a contract. I mean, Anthony Davis going from New Orleans to going to the Lakers, you know, saying where he wanted to play. You're seeing players more empowered than ever before, and I think that is sort of one of the key aspects that's almost that's dealing with all this disruption. And I mean, this isn't strictly about you know, the police brutality and the social justice side of things, but you are seeing players become more empowered, and I wonder if in the NHL, which has been a bit of a laggard on that front, are we going to see it more often? Are we going to see players forcing their way out of City A to go to City B and taking, you know, taking the power that they have in their talents, which is, you know, obviously the key component of all these leagues and all these games, is the athletic ability of these players. Are we going to be seeing that more often?
Yeah, no, it's a very good point, Drew. And, you know, I think going back to, you know, Evander Kane and his comments, I really do believe the Hockey Diversity Alliance deserves a lot of credit here. I mean, players like Kevin Shattenkirk, like Ryan Reeves, like Nazem Kadri, who's on the Hockey Diversity Alliance, these guys deserve credit, but specifically Evander Kane and specifically Matt Dumba. And we know Kane's history in Winnipeg, and as far as I'm concerned, everybody should be very proud about what Evander Kane has been doing, standing up for black people and standing up for minorities, people of color. Like, I'm serious. Like, what he's been doing, I think, is putting that in front of himself, right? And he's saying, we need to do more, right? So Evander Kane, Matt Dumba, I mean, these, you know, Matt Dumba, you know, we know what, you know, the various, you know, pre-game, you know, shows of support that Matt Dumba was doing and, you know, raising the fist and everything like that. That's important, right? And so I think that even though that happened, you know, before, you know, Jacob Blake was shot seven times, you know, that
it's all part of the same.
It's all part, I mean,
the same movement. The problem, yeah, was before, I mean, you know, the NHL and the players, I mean, you know, they did their show when the bubble started, you know, right, a number of weeks ago. And it was important for Matt Dumba. But, I mean, the imagery still wasn't great because it was Matt Dumba almost sitting by himself doing that. You know, Tyler Seguin of the Dallas Stars is acknowledging that he, you know, that he's going to take more of a leadership role. And I think
that's important, too. Robin Leonard kneeled during the national anthem. Like, think about, what was it, 4 years ago with Colin Kaepernick?
And 4 years to the day of Wednesday.
I mean, like, the fact that, you know, Colin Kaepernick hasn't played in the NFL since then, and it just shows you, you know, how powerful, you know, these gestures are, if you want to call it that. So I think the Hockey Diversity Alliance, and it goes back to what Dave said before, and, you know, we tried to get Anson Carter on this morning, but unfortunately, you know, he's busy with, you know, the NBC broadcast, but I think, you know, he also deserves a lot of credit for what he's been doing. You know, he's got a show on a YouTube show that NBC's allowing him to do, where he's interviewing players like Ryan Reeves, and he's using his platform, you know, to tell the stories of black people and colored people. And what he's been saying is he wants action items, right? Like, he doesn't want just, you know, tweeting out Black Lives Matter and all of this empty talk, and that's why the Hockey Diversity Alliance has put out actionable items to the NHL. And I don't know if we have time to get it, you know, get too far into them, but, you know, there have been things like, you know, making sure a certain amount of money is devoted to, you know, this cause and promoting the Diversity Alliance, and there have been other things like temporarily making the blue lines black and things like this. So I think they deserve a lot of credit. They're trying to make actionable change.
Absolutely, and I agree with you that they deserve the credit, and they're going to have to keep applying the pressure, and they're going to have to keep applying the pressure to the ownership groups in all these leagues, because it is the players who are going to be the driving force, and I think they're realizing that, and I think they're stepping up to the plate, and they're embracing the challenge that poses, and good for them in what has been an unprecedented week, of course, in professional sports. We'll talk more about this later on in the show. Claude Vilgrain, former NHL player, is going to join us to talk about his experiences in the game of hockey. We'll, you know, turn our focus now back to the Winnipeg Jets when we come back. We'll talk about Paul Maurice's interview that he conducted earlier this week, a real long-form sit-down with Nick Kypreos, and some real interesting comments coming out of that. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
I got a view from the zoomed in blue line camera that nobody else has, right?
Yes.
So we get it. It doesn't make it out. I saw it, I don't know, 15, 20 times. I said what I said. I believe what I said. I still believe what I said today.
That's Winnipeg Jets head coach Paul Maurice appearing on the Real Kuiper at Noon show.
Talking. Pretty sure it's Kipper.
Kipper. Sorry. The Real Kipper. Yeah.
I'm like, I don't know why Nick Kypreos would be called Kuiper, but
sorry,
okay.
Yeah. The Real Kipper at Noon show. Pardon me. It's a little sleepy this morning.
Sure.
Earlier this week.
Being inside, you're getting not as much fresh air.
That's right. Exactly. I don't feel as rejuvenated as normally. You know, talking about, the hit that Matthew Tkachuk leveled on Mark Scheifele. Obviously, it knocked Scheifele out of the playoffs. The Jets knocked out of the playoffs. And I got to tell you, I'm a little bit surprised. I thought that Paul Maurice wouldn't double down on it, because most people sort of thought that, in hindsight, he was maybe using it as a motivational tool, and he was using it as a way to fire up the Winnipeg Jets players. But
well, he absolutely was doing that too.
But he doubled down on it, given the opportunity to maybe backtrack, maybe given the opportunity to maybe temper his words. He said, "No, I believe what I said," and I think most people thought that he maybe was just playing some gamesmanship. But it does honestly sound a couple months later now, or a month later, that he truly believes that Matthew Tkachuk's hit on Mark Scheifele was dirty and deliberate and an attempt to injure the Winnipeg Jets centerman. So, given an opportunity to maybe pour cold water on it, Paul Maurice didn't do that. He added a little more fuel to the fire.
Yeah, good for
which
him.
I'm surprised about.
Good for him. Yeah, I was a little bit surprised. I listened to the interview. It was, I think it was around 45 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really good, because you don't see Paul Maurice like that during the season
for
obvious reasons. And, now that Nick Kypreos has his own show, he has the ability, I think, to, maybe be a little bit less mainstream, right? So they touched on a lot of things. They also touched on, when they both played in the Ontario Hockey League and stuff like that. But specifically when you're talking about, the Matthew Tkachuk, Scheifele incident, you mentioned, we talked about it, right? Like that, whatever that was 3 weeks ago or 4 weeks ago at this point, who knows, right? But, it was that gray area, right? Like, he obviously didn't get a penalty. There was no suspension. And I still think that it was borderline, if you can use that word, dirty. I really don't think there was the intent, but just because there wasn't the intent doesn't mean that there wasn't, like, we've all seen it, right? Like, it was a bit of a, if you haven't seen it, for those listening, it was kind of like a bit of a, Tkachuk pushed Scheifele's skate with his skate, slew foot, if you want to use that, a front slew foot, and then Scheifele goes into the boards and obviously, has the lower body ankle injury.
The crushing injury
is what they refer to it as. It was one of those plays where, Paul Maurice has kind of fixated on this camera angle that nobody else had. And absolutely, we know, guys, when you're talking about, reviewable goals or offsides or things like that, certain angles make a hit or a play look much worse, right? So, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, Paul Maurice thinks it was, a questionable hit, if you want to use that term, and he's sticking by that. So I have no problem with that.
I don't have a problem with it either. If he believes it, and if he's honest about it, and he's speaking passionately about it, well, that's all we ever ask of most people, when it comes to giving their opinion. It is a little weird, though, Dave, for a head coach to be doubling down and continuing to continuing to publicize what he believes, when typically the inclination of most head coaches after a while, after they're out of the heat of the moment, is to just sort of lessen the issue rather than increase it back to the forefront.
I don't know about you guys, but this video is becoming like a Zapruder film.
Yeah. I want to see that blue light camera.
Like, I'm thinking to myself, like, if I'm the Jets and you have access to that video, why not just release the video? Now,
well, they, like the Canadians did with slowing down the Niskanen hit into super slow motion.
It could be 20 years. It could be like that unreleased Nirvana song.
Yeah,
that,
like, eventually,
they didn't release until 20 years later.
Yeah, like in 10, 15 years, that video will be released and we'll all be going, oh, well, that's what he saw. But, I mean, I'm actually not terribly surprised. I mean, the reality is this. He got asked a question.
Yeah.
So what's he going to do? He's either, if he backs down,
I actually think it's more newsworthy if he backs down from his initial stance because he was so passionate about it. He was passionate about it after the game. He didn't change his stance when asked the following day.
Yeah.
So the fact is, I mean, and I don't remember, what were you saying?
No, go ahead. You can finish your thought.
And I was just saying, like, to me, you know, the reality is, like, if he's asked a question and he doesn't answer it, I think that becomes a bigger story than the fact that I don't find that what he did was a doubling down. I just feel like he confirmed what he had stated initially. And I think from his point of view, there's nothing wrong with that if that's what you believe. If you believe what you said and you don't change your opinion, like, that to me, the vacillating or the need to try and get it back to the middle to dial it back, look, be honest. And he's being honest. That's what he believes. So I'd rather him be honest and tell us what he originally thought and stick with that than now to dial it back just to kind of make things kumbaya with the Flames and Matthew Tkachuk. So, no, I don't have a problem with the comments. I mean, again, like I said, he's asked a question by Nick Kyprios.
Thank you.
Yeah, but guys, go back to the actual hit, right? And forget all of the media personalities that were coming out and they were saying that, you know, this hit is not suspendable and everything like that. We've all watched that hit at least 10, 20 times, right? Like Paul Maurice said, he's watched it 20 times. It's a very questionable hit, right? And the reason why I use the word questionable, not just because it's Matthew Tkachuk, but because of kind of, it almost looks like he's pushing Mark Scheifele into the boards, right? So as far as I'm concerned, it's not a dirty hit, but like I said, it's on that kind of, in that gray area in terms of what happened there. Because look at, Scheifele broke his ankle on the play.
Oh, no, he didn't break his ankle.
Well, he didn't technically break his ankle, but was a sprain or whatever it was.
It was a crushing injury is what it was, which is when your body part gets stuck between two solid objects, that being Tkachuk and the boards in this instance.
Well, the point I'm trying to make is it's a serious injury, right? It's not an obviously specifically a broken ankle, but they were worried that it was an Achilles tendon injury, right? Like, it was a very dangerous play, and obviously Scheifele was out for the rest of the series, right? And the Jets couldn't recover, but, you know, it was one of those plays. All I'm saying is I don't think it was a dirty play, but I guess what I'm saying is it was very close to a dirty play.
Well,
if that makes sense. Does that make sense?
I mean, half the time you make sense, which is basically what I'll take. But, you know, the Jets head coach, I mean, Mark Scheifele even came and didn't, you know, he said that he didn't think it was that, you know, that terrible of a hit.
Well, I'm not surprised that Scheifele would say that, though.
Because that's his personality or because that's, because he has to do battle with Tkachuk on the ice.
Yeah, I think at that point he's just like, what does he have to gain from going in the media and ripping a player?
What does Paul Maurice have to gain by coming out?
Again, Paul Maurice, well, he has a lot to gain. He had to inspire his team. He just lost his top center after the game. And then again, following it up the next day, he's got to keep that team motivated. So
not to mention, Dave, the Lion A injury and the Appleton injury. Yeah. He had three guys out.
But I get, you know, saying the comments and standing by them, you know, in the immediacy of it, you know, that night and then the next day, I get that.
Yeah.
I'm surprised that a month later he... You know, he truly does believe what he believes.
That's the whole point. I don't know why you're.
Well, I don't think it's a conspiracy theory, Drew. Like, I mean, again, some people listening might not have seen it, but I think most Jets fans, you know, have seen it, and most, you know, hockey observers, because it was a big deal, guys. I mean, that was game one of the Jets and Flames series, right? So if you watch the play, I mean, there is that little, at least for me, I can't speak for you guys, I can't speak for anybody else. I know some people think that just because it was Matthew Tkachuk, there was that kind of, you know, idea that, well, it's Tkachuk, it's got to be dirty, right? But I don't think that's the case. The play, and you can go back, and I think I might go back and watch it another, you know, four or five times, but it was one of those plays that you kind of said to yourself, especially when you saw it, Dave, in real time, you kind of thought, oh, wow, that might have been a dirty play. Mm. And then you watch it again, and you're like, maybe Scheifele slipped. It was one of those plays.
There's ambiguity.
Exactly.
And I think, I, but again, Drew, I have to go back to your point. I really don't know why you're so surprised, honestly, because I honestly would be surprised if he had taken a different position. But I think the fact is that, you know, I mean, again, he's asked a question, and he's not doubling down. So, I mean, like, I really don't see what Paul Maurice did as changing his position whatsoever. I mean, he just, like I said, he answers a question in the same manner in which he answered it. Obviously not with the same level of venom. You know, I mean, he was pretty PO'd after game one and throughout that series. But, like, so now he's had some time, and the reality is the reality. But so you're right. There's no value in him trying to stir things up. But, I mean, if he's asked a question, I mean, he's either a liar, right? Or he's had time to reflect and say, okay, well, you know, maybe I've changed my position. Or, you know, to the point I made earlier, I think maybe he just believes what he saw and he hasn't changed his position. So I don't know. I don't see any, again, I think it'd be a bigger deal if he had changed his mind and said, you know, it's not that big a deal. Cause then you'd be like, okay, maybe was he just saying it to stir up his team and didn't really believe that? But again, I think he's been consistent. So I think that's all really you can ask of people is just to show a certain level of consistency. And he's done that from that point after the game to his interview yesterday.
Hey guys, I really believe, you know, sorry, Drew, I just wanted to quickly say, I truly believe this is something we're going to be talking about for a while. Like, I think that it's a type of hit.
The first time the Flames and the Jets play each other next season is certainly going to be a storyline.
Yeah, well, I don't
especially because Brad Treliving, you know, the Flames GM is coming out, and as you would expect, he's forcefully defending Matthew Tkachuk, and he's criticizing Maurice's comments. And I'd be curious, you know, what's going through Treliving's mind when he hears, if he hears Maurice's comments again from this week.
I don't know how many people, I mean, to be honest with you, how many people really even picked it up? Like, we had it on site.
Yeah.
So I'm not so sure. Like, I don't know how widely distributed it got.
And probably a function of all the protests that were going on, because this came out Wednesday, if I'm not mistaken, or Thursday, one or the other.
One of the two.
And the protests were going on, you know, right in the midst of it. So I do think it's flying under the radar a little bit. But, you know, if it does get brought back to the forefront, I'd be curious as to Brad Treliving's reaction after he came out.
I think he would say the same thing he had said before. He would defend his player.
Yeah, I think he'd be getting a little bit more upset that Maurice is continuing to ban the Flames.
I disagree with you. I respectfully disagree. I don't think Maurice is fanning the Flames. He didn't voluntarily say, hey, Kipper, let's talk about, you know, the Scheifele hit on, he was asked a question. So what do you, like, if we have a guest who comes on our show and we ask them a question, we don't expect them to say, you know what, I don't feel like answering that question.
But these are head coaches, and they're way more political, and they're way more politically savvy, and I bet most other head coaches.
Okay, so what could he have said?
I think he just, you know, you can blow it off very easily without having to. I think because he was talking to Kiprios, and they go all the way back to their OHL days where they played against each other in the OHL, and if you watch the interview, there's clearly a camaraderie between the two of them, and there's a relationship between the two of them. I'm willing to bet that if you had asked Maurice that same question, or if Murat goes and asks Maurice that same question, or Mikey McIntyre, or any of our buddies in the media go and ask Maurice that same question, he does not give that same answer in that same way. Just because I think it had to do with the familiarity and the fact that he was talking to somebody who's outside of the Winnipeg marketplace. That allowed him to be a little bit more honest.
I'm disagreeing with you on that. That's because you what you're lacking, what your answer lacks.
I'm lacking a lot, Dave.
Well, that's true, but what I would suggest your answer lacks, unfortunately, Drew, is the fact that what you're suggesting is Maurice isn't savvy enough to know that he's on camera. And let me tell you.
No. I'm not saying that Maurice isn't savvy.
But I'm not suggesting you are, but I'm saying that he picks up the nuance. He may be more jovial in his responses to Nick Kiprios than he would be to any of the guys, although he's pretty familiar with most of the Winnipeg media and he doesn't have a problem doing that. But I really do think that this guy knows. When it comes to media, Paul Maurice has no problems. He knows he was in the business.
Yeah, well, he's very media savvy.
So he knows what he's answering when he's answering it.
And we can all agree that coaches and general managers are going to defend their own players, right? So Brad Treliving is going to defend Matthew Tkachuk. Paul Maurice, Chevy, they're going to defend Mark Scheifele, right? But the point is that people are going to see what they want to see. Some people thought it was a dirty hit. Most people didn't think it was a dirty hit, but I guess my point in this segment was that I think it's one of those hits that is in that gray area. And I don't think there's a way that you can say one way or the other. It's not like it's dirty or not dirty. Because obviously the result was Scheifele, has the injury and he couldn't come back in the series. And because it's Matthew Tkachuk, it's almost like if it was any other player, if it was Andrew Mangiapane or somebody like that, right, you probably wouldn't, I mean, put this under the microscope as much, but that's all I'm saying. I think it was one of those hits that, it's just really tough to say definitively, if Matthew Tkachuk should have got a penalty, should have been suspended on that play, because I just think it was one of those plays where, you also had Mark Scheifele, maybe he slipped a little bit, lost balance, and just the results, the fact that he didn't come back in the series, just made it, seem even worse.
When we come back, we're going to discuss David Gustafsson. He's been loaned to a team in Sweden to start the 2020-2021 season. We talk about what role he's going to fit with the Winnipeg Jets, if it is with the Jets, when the new NHL season restarts. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
On for Gustafsson. Gustafsson protects the puck against Carlson. Gustafsson in with a wrist. Scores! David Gustafsson has his first NHL point, and it's a goal.
I'm sure 20 years from now that goal is going to be a deadly snipe top corner. In reality, it was a bit of a weak one on Aaron Dell, but it counts all the same, and that was David Gustafsson.
Well, what was important is who did he go around?
Eric Carlson.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, you heard Dennis just say that in the call.
I know, but I'm saying, like, that's.
I miss Dennis.
I know. I was just thinking that as he was doing the call. I was like, oh, it sounds good to hear Dennis's voice.
We got to have him on soon.
Yeah.
There you go. Anyways, that was David Gustafsson's first and only goal with the Winnipeg Jets in the brief time he had this year. He's been loaned by the Jets to a team in Sweden, in his hometown of Sweden. That's not actually in the Swedish Elite League, if I'm not mistaken.
No, because you can't sign short-term contracts in the Swedish Elite League.
Right. Oh, there you go. So it's a Tier 2 team in Sweden, Tingsrids, if I'm pronouncing that correctly.
I don't speak
Swedish, believe it or not, but I'm going to...
I don't think you speak English very well.
Sometimes I don't either, you know. I've had good times and bad times. This might be a little bit of a struggle so far. But in any event, David Gustafsson going to start the year, which is a good thing, obviously, for him. He can't be off the ice for that length of time, you know, going almost, you know, it'll be close to a full calendar year.
Yeah, he hasn't played since March.
Yeah, so he's got to get some games in, and that's what he's going to do in Sweden to start the 2020-2021 season. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Minuk with you in Dave Minuk's studio.
Yeah, it's our studio.
It's our studio, yeah. This segment of the show brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy, always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. To make an appointment to get your teeth to ting, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. So with the news that Gustafsson's going to start the year overseas in Sweden and eventually come back to North America, presumably, do you think that right now as we sit here on the 29th of August, the Jets are penciling him in for a spot with the big club, or do you think that he's more likely destined to start the season with the Manitoba Moose, Dave?
Well, I mean, it's a good question, Drew. I think, you know, the Jets have shown this propensity from starting these young guys, especially the ones who play center on the wing, and we haven't really seen that with David Gustafsson.
Yeah.
We've really, you know, when he came down to the Moose, he stayed at center, and it's interesting because with guys like Jack Roslovic, for example, we saw him start to transition to the wing after playing a lot of center in the American Hockey League. So with Gustafsson, that's not what we saw. We saw him up the middle for the Manitoba Moose on the top line. In the last 10 games, I believe he played with Christian Reichel, who obviously signed the contract earlier, the two-year ELC with the Jets, and Christian Vesalainen, who those two really showed some nice chemistry together. So to me, Gustafsson is still playing center, and he's, you know, we'll probably see it in Sweden. I imagine he'd still be playing center up there. So I would imagine that if the Jets' plan right now is to have him at center. Now, does that mean he's going to slot in where obviously Nick Shore, who's a UFA, is currently? I mean, I could see it. The kid is physically mature. I mean, a lot of times, you know, you want a player in the AHL because you need them to, not necessarily from a talent perspective, from a physical maturity perspective.
They need to bulk up a little bit.
Yeah. Not David Gustafsson. This kid is a unit. I mean, the kid is, you know, he may as well be 25. Like, that's what he looks like when you stand beside him. And again, that doesn't mean that he has all the physical tools that guys who are veteran guys have necessarily. There's things you can gain. So if he was to start the year in the AHL, I don't think it's a bad thing, because I think the learning he would do as the first line center of the Manitoba Moose would go a long way to helping him as a pro. And we've seen that, you know, with, you know, hundreds of guys throughout the NHL. I think what's the percentage? 88-point-something% of guys have gone through the AHL in some capacity. So I don't ever lament guys who spend some time in the AHL and develop in that league, because it gives them the opportunity. But again, I could very easily see David Gustafsson. We saw him play 22 games with the Jets when Brian Little was injured and the Jets had a need. we'll see what happens with him this year. But I mean, I think there's a very good chance that he could be playing in that fourth line center role.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And, you know, back in early May, Dave, you had a really good chat with Pascal Vincent about David Gustafson and other players, Jansen Harkins and Jonathan Kovacevic, all of the players, you know, that had kind of had breakout seasons, the younger Moose players mainly. Yep. And I remember, you know, what stuck out to me about what Pascal Vincent said. You mentioned, you know, Pascal also mentioned the maturity, you know, the physicality and everything like that. But he said when the game's on the line, you can trust him, right? Mm-hmm. And that's, to me, what stood out. And I remember in your article, Dave, you talked about that. When Brian Little was injured back in early November, I mean, we've talked about that many times before. The Jets then had to move Blake Wheeler to center, and they had to kind of, you know, shuffle the deck chairs, right, guys? But David Gustafson, to me, even though he only scored the one goal, to me it wasn't about, you know, the offensive totals. Nobody in the Jets, coaching staff or management, nobody was expecting David Gustafson to score, you know, 10 goals, right? Like, it was about his development, and I think they wanted him to develop with the Moose, but because of the injuries that you had, I mean, he made the team, don't get me wrong. Like, he deserves credit for making the team. I don't think, you know, we necessarily expected that to happen, but he was put out there by Paul Maurice. And when he played with the Moose, it was a brief period of time, but Pascal Vincent mentioned that he trusted him, right? Like, he's only 20 years old, guys. I think he was, if I'm not mistaken, he was 19.
He was 19. Right? 20 in right? April.
Yeah. So he was 19 for those, the games that he played in the American Hockey League and NHL, right? So I think what needs to be the focus here is, and we don't know how many games he's going to play in the NHL or the AHL. We don't know when the season's going to start. That's, I mean, right. We think it's going to be early December, right, guys? But, I mean, if he plays with the Moose, Dave, he's going to play in a top six role, most likely, right?
Yep.
If he plays with the Jets, most likely he's going to be a bottom three guy, a bottom six guy. But
if he's playing that fourth line center role, right. I think to maximize his value there, Paul Maurice is going to have to use him as a fourth line center way more often than he typically uses his fourth line, which has always been what people have lamented about the Jets' fourth line for, I mean, going on a decade now, is that fourth line has never really been able to get any consistent minutes night in, night out, where you know that they're good for 10 or 11 or 12 minutes.
Right, and that's why I think especially, I mean, we're what are we talking about, 3 months away here from the NHL the next, you know, 2021 season. So there's going to be, you know, many weeks and months to talk about this, guys. But I think, you know, at least in my opinion, when I look at, you know, the New York Islanders, or I look at a team like the Philadelphia Flyers, or, you know, another team is the St. Louis Blues, like, I would like to see, you know, an established fourth liner come in. You look at the Canucks, Jay Beagle, like a Brandon Sutter. Like, Brandon Sutter's been on the third line or the fourth line. But the point is, especially if you're going to have a Gustafson, I think you need, you know, like,
he's got to get regular playing time.
Well, he's got to get regular playing time, but I think you also have to have established players who know that they're fourth line guys. Like Cal Clutterbuck and Casey Cizikas, these types of players, I mean, they know they're fourth line guys. Jay Beagle's won a cup. At this point in his career, I think Jay Beagle's, you know, complaining about not being in the top six. Jay Beagle, Antoine Roussel, these guys know they're third and fourth line guys. That's all I'm saying. I think that's something, in addition to, you know, hopefully acquiring a second line center if Brian Little's not able to play, and acquiring a top four defenseman. Dave, that's all I'm saying. I would love to see an established player come in and help out some of these younger players, because a guy like Mason Appleton, sure, could he be on the, you know, quote unquote third line, you know, with Adam Lowry and Andrew Kopp, if that's your third line, sure. But he could also be a fourth line guy, and I have no problem with that, but he's still a young player. So that's all I'm saying. I mean, I wouldn't mind seeing, you know, a veteran player like I'm using a Jay Beagle as an example, because Vancouver acquired him last summer and he's fit in really nicely on the Canucks.
You know, it's just, my point is, if he's going to play with the Jets, and I do think that the Jets probably are considering having him as their fourth line center next season on a regular basis, they have to give him that regular ice time. And that means you have to deal with the ups and downs that comes with being, you know, a 20-year-old player, and maybe they make a mistake in a game. That doesn't mean you can just cut back their time to, you know, 6 minutes the next night. You have to have him out there on a regular basis playing, because that's how he's going to develop. And yep. I know the NHL is not, you know, the quote-unquote developmental league, but if he's going to be, if you think he's good enough to be in your top 12, that means you need to have him on the ice for more than just, you know, 6 minutes a game. And that's, I think, going to be the area of concern when it comes to his development. Does Paul Maurice have that trust factor with him, Dave?
Yeah, no, Drew, you're 100% right. I think that's that'll be the key for Paul Maurice, is to ensure that he, you know, really uses that player, because while it's not a developmental league, to your point, you can't stifle. There's no point in having a kid playing 2 minutes a game.
Right.
There's absolutely none. Like, if you're going to do that, to Ezzy's point, get a veteran center who knows his role, who doesn't need that. Because you know what the reality.
Another example is like Pierre-Edward Belmar on Colorado.
That's right. But don't have a guy who could be playing. Like, that was my biggest problem with a lot of sometimes these moves is you see guys who could be playing 20 minutes with the Moose are sitting in a press box. And I'm like, well, where's the value in that?
Yeah, or they're playing 5 minutes in the fourth line.
If that, right? So you're sitting there going, well, wait a second, that doesn't make a lot of sense. Because I know, again, like at the end of the day, Pomerantz's job isn't to develop hockey players. That's why you have an AHL unit. But if that's your mantra, and if you don't feel a player is sufficiently able to help you win, if you're not there to develop him, you're there to help him win, the team win. And I think that's where the Jets have to make sure, if that's the case, if they don't feel a player is sufficiently able to help them win now, then ensure that he's with the Moose developing.
And last, I just want to say last word, yeah, really quickly, Drew. I mean, I think you have to remember, too, David Gustafson was drafted in the second round in 2018, the year the Jets didn't have a first-round pick. Right. We didn't know a lot about David Gustafson, right? And we kind of knew, okay, he's not necessarily going to put up big offensive numbers because in the Swedish league he didn't have offensive numbers. So we heard, you know, he's got good size, two-way forward, everything like that, centerman. But I think you have to keep in mind the fact that he was playing NHL games at 19 years old. We thought it might be, you know, not until 21, 22 years old that we saw him in the NHL. So I think what we have to really keep in mind is that this is a prospect that has developed a lot quicker than maybe, you know, the Jets amateur scouting staff thought at the time, the Jets management thought at the time. So I think this is a guy that, you know, his future looks really bright. I think we have to keep that in mind in addition to, you know, talking about whether he's going to play fourth line center or in the American Hockey League. I think Gustafson is a guy that, you know, he's going to be a key part of the Jets' young core going forward.
There's no question about that, and his development and his usage is what I'm keeping an eye on if he is indeed with the Winnipeg Jets next season as opposed to being with the Manitoba Moose. When we come back, we look at the Jets' pending unrestricted free agents, and we talk about which players we think could possibly come back and which players we think are going to be on their way out. Much more to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Chopped away from him by Wheeler. Shifley on for Nikolai Ehlers. At the line for Kulikov, scores! Dmitry Kulikov, who did not register a goal last year, drills it from the line and off the pipe and in.
From back in October, the Jets' second game of the season, you remember Kulikov scoring late in the second period to cut the lead to 4-1, and then the Jets staged a pretty epic third period comeback before coming back to win in a shootout against the New Jersey Devils. You know, I gotta tell you, I think that Kulikov goal, you know, that might have been my favorite Jets goal all season.
Well, it also because it from the previous season, our trivia question was finally relevant.
That's right. It was a Friday night that the Jets scored that goal, and the next day in our over-under segment for the season, we were going to talk about how many games it was going to take for Dmitry Kulikov to score, and then obviously he made me eat my words scoring on that Friday night, had to scrap that question. But Dennis Bayak with the call, Kulikov scoring against the Devils from back in October. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to go through the Jets' pending unrestricted free agents and discuss if they should go or if they should come back. We're going to leave out Dylan DeMello and Laurent Brossoit from this conversation because we know that DeMello certainly is a guy that a lot of people would be interested in seeing come back to the Jets. And we talked about Laurent Brossoit and the battle for the backup goaltender position earlier this month. So let's start on the back end where you have the Jets have four pending unrestricted free agents, one of them being Dmitry Kulikov. Should he go or should he come back, Dmitry Kulikov, assuming, of course, that the price is right for all these players?
Well, I mean, that's a big question, though, with him, because he was making $4 million a year.
Yeah,
and as far as I'm concerned, no, I wouldn't bring him back.
Even for $1 million? Like, I'm saying, let's almost take money out of the equation. You know, at a point in time, some players just need to move on, that, you know, their time is up in a particular city, and you wish them well. Could you foresee the Jets bringing Dmitry Kulikov back, obviously at a lesser value, you know, if they don't shore up that left side through trade or through yeah, free agency? Or is it time for him just to move on to the next stage of his career?
Well, I mean, that's obviously not my call, but you're asking for our opinion. Yes. And, you know, for me, no, I wouldn't bring him back. I mean, yeah, maybe I wouldn't have a problem if the Jets give him a one-year deal for $1 million a year or something like that. I don't know if he would take that, though. Like, is he going to go from making $4 million a year, or is he going to go maybe play in the KHL or something like that, right? So unless it's for a really low cap hit, guys, like, to me, I've seen enough of Kulikov in 3 years with the Jets. I definitely do not think that, you know, he should be playing, you know, top 4 minutes. If he's a third-pairing defenseman or your seventh defenseman, fine. But I do think that he's replaceable.
Dave, should he go or should he come back?
Shouldn't we say, should he go or should he stay?
You could do that, too.
You're
sounding like a guy who's volunteering to start crafting these show plans, I got to tell you.
No, I just like to critique.
Okay.
Arbitrary
quarterback.
I think Ezzie's right. I think that if you're going to get him for a reasonable number, then it's fine. But, like, the reality is he going to drop $4.3 million? I don't think you can take the money out of it. So is he going to drop him $4.3 to a million or the league lowest contract? No. And I think that's the reality. So if he's a debt, like, one area where you need depth is defense. So, you know, people talk about Heinola, people talk about Sandberg, and those guys are young up-and-comers, but we don't know if they're playing with the Moose or with the Jets. So the fact of the matter is, and even if they are playing with the Jets, there's no guarantee guys are going to last the season. You always have to have that depth.
Well, they say 10 NHL-caliber defensemen is what you need.
Correct. So, you know, and to me, you know, Kulikov had a better year than we've seen from him, really, this year. But, again, I think it comes down to the money and the term. And, again, if it's reasonable for the Jets, then I think with the familiarity he brings, you know, you could fit him into that, like as he said, into that maybe that, 5-6 role. But, I mean, you really don't necessarily want him in your top four, I don't think.
Moving on to another Jets defenseman who's a pending unrestricted free agent, Nathan Beaulieu. Should he stay or should he go?
Well, again, Nathan Beaulieu and Dmitry Kulikov are kind of in the same category as far as I'm concerned, right? Like, they're good NHL defensemen. Can they play in the NHL? Absolutely. But I don't think you want them on your left side in your top four. Like, all due respect, I just don't think that they're good enough, right? Like, they don't bring enough to the table. Kulikov, Beaulieu, these are guys, like, Beaulieu, we saw him drop the gloves. Like, he's a guy that has that physical element to his game. But as far as I'm concerned, like, he's a third pairing guy or your 7 or 8 defenseman, right? Like, and especially guys, you got to look at, like, Beaulieu and Kulikov. Like, Kulikov has been on the Jets for 3 years. Beaulieu has been on the Jets for a couple of years, right? Or a year and a half, right? Like, what's their ceiling here? Like, to me, like, you're not going to get more offense, or you're not, like, they're not going to change at this point. Like, you're talking about guys that are, you know, both in their late 20s. Right? I don't think Kulikov's 30 years old yet. He's 28, 29 years old. Same thing goes for Beaulieu. Like, these guys were both, you know, first-round picks. They've got talent. They're definitely NHL defensemen. But you have to ask yourself, like, why would you sign them to more than a one-year deal if they're just going to be depth defensemen at this point? That's my point. So maybe Chevy signs one of these guys, but I'm saying you're asking me. I wouldn't sign them to more than 1 year.
No, we're only talking
Or about, I wouldn't sign them at all.
We're talking about... We just said you need 10 NHL caliber defensemen. If all four of these pending unrestricted free agent defensemen leave, mm-hmm. you have to replace them with other NHL defensemen.
Well, you've already said, though, I mean, like, there's a strong chance Dylan DeMello re-signs.
Well, that's okay. That's one. I mean, you need to add to
You've got Josh Morrissey. You've got Neil Pionk. You've got Tucker Pullman.
Yeah.
You've got Sammy Niku.
Okay.
Dylan DeMello.
If he resigns, so...
I mean, so there's the chance that you're going to have, one of Dylan Sandberg or Ville Heinola, possibly. I agree with Dave. I think there's a good chance that those guys, especially Dylan Sandberg, I think spends a little bit of time, you know, with the Manitoba Moose. So, yeah, you have to probably...
And Dahlstrom's under contract for 1 more year.
Carl Dahlstrom, so you've got 6 or 7... Like, to me, Sammy Niku's a guy that I think has to play for the Jets next year. What more can he prove at the American Hockey League level? Well, so that's what I'm saying. So, so you're going to bring Kulikov and Beaulieu back. Are those guys top four defensemen?
No. I'm not.
So, I'm not saying you're saying that. Drew.
No. You're not understanding what my point is, Ezzie.
No, you're saying sign them or not sign them.
I'm saying you need to fill out your roster, probably with guys on 1 year contracts that are.
But that's what Ezzie just said. He said if you want, bring them those guys back on. Like the minimum type of deal.
And that's what I said. You don't give Beaulieu 3 years.
No one's talking about giving them 3 years.
Well, so what do you want me to say here?
I want to. You have four pending unrestricted free agent defensemen. Of the four, do the Jets bring back one of the four? Do they bring back zero of the four?
I can't answer that. I'm giving you my opinion.
That's what I'm asking you for, is your opinion.
I gave you my opinion.
Okay, you haven't even talked about Spezza or Betetto. So, you know, of the four pending unrestricted free agent defensemen,
Beaulieu.
Which of the four do you bring back?
My answer is they'll probably bring back Beaulieu, would be my guess. Because he fit well with Pullman. He fits well in the team, obviously. I mean, the team likes Betetto, but I would suspect that at this time you're going to go with the – if you ask me which of the four is the most likely to be re-signed, I think it's Beaulieu.
And same question for you.
Yeah, I would probably say Beaulieu, maybe Betetto. I mean, but again, you're not going to bring back all four. You're probably not even going to bring back more than one. But I agree with you. I mean, if you're not bringing back – especially if you're not bringing back all four, you're going to have to sign some depth defensemen. I agree with what your point is. You're going to have probably, you know, 9 or 10 quality NHL defensemen that don't include Ville Heinola or Dylan Samberg. But I would probably say, based on what he offers, I would probably – if it's between Nathan Beaulieu, Dmitry Kulikov, Sabiza Betetto, I'm probably going to take Beaulieu.
When we come back, we're going to be joined by John Mattis to talk about the week that was in the NHL and with the Stanley Cup playoffs. Much more to come. Hour number two up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Minuk with you. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us here via text message. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. Trying to get a hold of John Mattis to join us to talk about the week that was in the NHL and, of course, the restart of the Stanley Cup playoffs later on this morning. Our Illegal Curve question of the day, we want to hear from you. Do you think that David Gustafson will play for the Jets on a regular basis next season? And if so, what role will he play? Send us your comments via Twitter at Illegal Curve. Send us your comments via text. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. This segment of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show is brought to you by our good friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com. Tonight at Rumors, two shows. Matt Nightingale is the headliner. Tickets available, RumorsComedyClub.com.
Yeah, Matt's a local guy. I've seen him many times before.
Yeah.
Really funny guy.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly.
I've seen him at Rumors, too.
That's a good place to see him. Exactly, yeah. Rumors
but
Comedy
But he's been
Club.
On the local circuit forever.
Yeah, yeah. Seeing him at Rumors tonight, RumorsComedyClub.com. You know, we're trying to get a hold of John Mattis, so once we're able to do that, we'll bring him into the show. We talked about the defenseman UFAs. Let's look at the group of forwards that are pending unrestricted free agents. There are five of them. Nick Shore, Logan Shaw, Mark Letestu, Gabriel Bork, Cody Eakin. Those five guys, of course, Eakin coming over from the Vegas Golden Knights at the trade deadline. The other four acquired either in the offseason or early in the season as it pertains to Nick Shore coming over from the Toronto Maple Leafs. Of those five, how many of those five would you bring back? And you know, and which of the five would you be bringing back, if any? We'll start with you, Dave.
Well, I mean, again, you're bringing Cody Eakin back, but you're not bringing him back to be your second-line center. I mean, you can bring him back in a fourth-line center role, but he's not going to take that money. So that's, you know, again, that seems like you're barking up the wrong tree. Logan Shaw, I mean, again, to me, he's a guy you like having with the Moose. You know, he was a very capable scorer at the American Hockey League level with Manitoba. And so, to me, I would bring him back because he was a good fit in with that locker room. And, you know, from his point of view, there's opportunity, right? The Jets have gone to him the last couple of years, brought him up. He's played, you know, more games than I think anybody anticipated Logan Shaw playing. So I think from his point of view, it's a good fit in the organization, even if he starts the year with the Manitoba Moose. And, no, I mean, I don't think the rest of the guys are coming back. So I would say maybe Nick Shore, if they're not prepared to start Gustafson as that fourth line center, then maybe Nick Shore, you know, to give that veteran presence and a guy who knows his role, and then allow Gustafson to develop. And if you have injuries, you bring him up. But again, like I said, those would be the two I would think.
Yeah, and like you said, I mean, there's going to be some of these guys that don't come back. Cody Eakin, to me, I think we all agree he's not a second line center on the Jets. Mm-hmm. Be interesting if, you know, he's an option at fourth line center.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, Cody Eakin, I think, was making just under $4 million, if I'm not mistaken, $3.9, $3.8 million, right? I'd have to double check, but you're not going to pay him that much to be your fourth line center.
No.
So you're looking at a bit of a, you know, a pay deduction, if you want to call it that. You know, he's probably, I don't know, whatever. I'm not a capologist, but I don't think you're going to pay him that much money, right? So maybe he's an option at fourth line center. And I agree with you. Logan Shaw, Dave, and you know this, he's been played on the Moose for 2 years now. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's played with the Jets and the Moose, but yeah. He, if I'm not mistaken, he had 25 goals, some 26 goals a couple of years ago for the Moose. So he's a guy to me that, you know, would be a great player for the Moose and maybe a call-up guy. So, I mean, I think Logan Shaw definitely has value in the Jets organization, specifically with the Moose. When you're talking about, you know, Gabriel Bork, I mean, again, Gabriel Bork to me is kind of one of those tweeners. Like, he's a guy that, you know, he can play in the NHL, he can be a fill-in guy, but I don't necessarily know if you want him playing above a fourth-line role. So again, like,
I don't know if you want him playing in the fourth line. Well, never mind.
Especially considering they brought him in to be a PK specialist,
right,
and he didn't. Did he play 1 minute on the PK? Other than serving the penalties for like too many men.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, and he certainly wasn't effective in that role that they brought him in for.
Right. And to me, like, Mark Letestu is obviously a guy that's had a great NHL career. So, like, to me, you know, his NHL days, his better days certainly are behind him. So maybe he's a guy that, you know, can come back and play for the Moose. But I think at this point, like, he's not a guy that can play a regular role in the NHL. And I think, you know, the Jets would probably tell you that as well. So, you know, you're talking about, you know, there's a chance that only one or two of these four players is re-signed, because you have to look at augmenting that fourth line role. I really strongly believe that. And the example that I used earlier in the show was Pierre-Edward Belmar on Colorado.
It means your fourth line. I mean, when we talked about this, you know, earlier in the month,
right,
we talked about how the Jets fourth line from, you know, for the last decade has not really had an identity. It has not, you know, whereas you look at, you know, different fourth lines around the league, and you just mentioned Pierre-Edward Belmar in Colorado. You know, we talk, you know, a little bit ad nauseum about the Clutterbuck Cizikas Martin line in New York, how that fourth line,
which has featured Ross Johnston at times.
Yeah, you know, which that line has an identity. They know what you're getting out of your fourth line. You have players to specifically fill those roles. Here in Winnipeg, that fourth line has always been sort of a dog's breakfast of veteran guys, you know, getting their last maybe one-way contract, guys who are on a two-way deal, you know, just sort of, you know, waiver pickups in the middle of the season to fill a role. It's never really been an identifiable fourth line. All these players at this stage in their career, you know, are fourth line guys. I mean, mm-hmm. If that. I mean, Cody Eakin is probably best suited for a fourth line role, of course, you know, at the NHL level. But I mean, if Mark Letestu or Gabriel Bork get one-way contracts this offseason, I'll be surprised at that. Just because there's no evidence that says that they can be, or they should be, NHL regulars at this stage in their career. Same with Logan Shaw, he would get.
Although Logan Shaw had 3 goals this season, Adam Lowry had 4, and Mason Appleton had 5.
Right.
And they probably played about 15 games more than he did. So
right.
Don't get me wrong. Again, I think Logan Shaw is best suited for your AHL club helping. Again, I'm of the opinion that you put your AHL club where you don't have a salary cap situation, where you can at least ensure that these guys are surrounded, the prospects are going to be surrounded by guys who will make them successful and breed success. And I think, you know, especially if they're feeling good at the American Hockey League level, they come up and they play in the NHL and that good feeling continues. So a guy like Logan Shaw, again, I'm sounding like a broken record. I'd bring him back, but again, from that Manitoba Moose role.
Right. So if he's on a two-way contract, you know, where a two-way contract where he provides the depth to the organization,
right,
he provides leadership at the Moose level, that makes perfect sense. Mm-hmm. I mean, but
no, but the other guys, I mean, again, Eakin, to Ezzy's point, you're not bringing back Eakin for, he's not going to take a pay cut. He's not, I mean,
well, of course he's going to take a pay cut.
Well, I'm saying, but he's not going to take a hometown discount to the point where the Jets are going to find themselves in a situation. Like, how much did Nick Shore make last year? What was his? I can't remember off the top of my head.
Probably around
Nick Shore made $750,000 last
year. My point is that Cody Eakin is not going down. Like, if you're the Jets, do you really want to be filling that fourth line role with a guy who's going to be making $2 million, $2.5 million?
Well, I don't think Cody Eakin's going to make that much money. Do you think he's going to get that in his next contract after the performance that he had this past season?
I honestly don't know. I mean, we haven't looked long term at what his projection is, but I'm just saying, like, I don't know that you're going to be able to get him for a number that you're going to want.
Another team, and, you know, I strongly believe, again, it's easy for me to sit here on our radio show and say that, you know, one of the big things that Chevy should go out and get is a fourth line guy, but, you know, I use Pierre-Edward Belmar, fourth line center from the Colorado Avalanche. Another guy, a perfect example, is Patrick Maroon. Patrick Maroon is on the fourth line wing of the Tampa Bay Lightning. Cedric Paquette is the center. And they've had, I believe it's Carter Verhaeghe lately, or Mitchell Stevens, I think, is the other guy on that fourth line of Tampa Bay. They've had a few guys on that fourth line. But the point is, like, to me, that's what that fourth line needs. They need a veteran.
They're paying Maroon $900,000. I mean, it's not like they're paying, you know.
Well, that's what I'm saying. And those guys are easier. Ryan Carpenter was a guy that the Blackhawks went out, and Carpenter and Belmar, of course, were guys that were on the Golden Knights previously. Mm-hmm. So my point is that I think if you want to really have an identity and make your fourth line better, you're going to have to get established players. Like, you're going to have to get guys that can chip in a little bit more than, you know, one or two goals. Right?
Well, I mean, if you have Cody Eakin on your fourth line, you're loving it.
Well, that was my point. Right. That was my point. I would bring him back if he knows he's going to be the fourth line center and his cap hit isn't going to be too high. I don't know what that cap hit is going to be. The Jets are going to have more cap space. So let's say it's $2 million a year for sake of an argument. I would have no problem with that, but I think you still have to bring in, you know, and address that second-line center position.
Well, there's no question, of course, that if you're bringing him back, it's coming not as the second-line center. It's been proven that he can't play that role, and he's ill-suited to play that role, and that's not an insult. That's just the reality of the situation mm-hmm. right now. When we come back, John Mattis is going to join us on this side of the break, talk about the NHL, talk about the week that was, talk about the restart of the games in Toronto with the Lightning and the Bruins getting started in about 45 minutes. John, up next, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Saturday morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Minuk with you. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can also reach us via text message. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
He is the national hockey writer for thescore.com. He's a good friend of the program. We're pleased to welcome back John Mattis. John, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us. How are you?
Good, guys. I'm well. Thanks for having me on, and let's talk hockey here.
Yeah, let's talk some hockey. I mean, obviously, the first game of the day, it's going to be a triple header day, gets underway in about 45 minutes' time in the bubble in Toronto. The Lightning and the Bruins, you know... Given the 2-day postponement that happened to talk about social justice issues and the players going on strike to put the focus on social justice issues, how awkward do you think at least the first couple minutes of this game might be as they get back to playing hockey later today in Toronto?
Yeah, I think that's a totally fair way to put it, awkwardness, because not only were these guys meeting and talking about real life issues over the last couple days, but it's a noon game, right? So it's not like, you know, guys are waking up at 10 a.m. today and they're getting ready, getting in the zone for a 7 p.m. game. It's like, no, you wake up at, I don't know when they wake up. Let's say it was 7 a.m. and they're playing at noon. You got to get going. You got to, even though obviously the last few days have been very important, you got to find a way to get in your flow state and get ready for the game and push aside the rest of the world, because you can't play your best when you've got other things on your mind, right? So it's different. I would imagine it'll be a little tentative, maybe for the first period. Although this series has been a little wonky, it's been a little weird with obviously Tampa Bay destroying Boston in the last game, and then also the series starting off where you're like, wow, the Bruins, they look dynamite here. So it's been a bit of a tough series to get a hold on, especially because they're such strong teams. It should be, you know, 4-3 games. It should be going to overtime. It should be, you know, the most exciting series left. But what we've seen so far is one good performance from one team, another good performance from the other team, and we just haven't been able to figure out what's going on in this series. So it'll be interesting. The fact that they're the noon game adds another layer of intrigue.
Yeah, John, and we want to get into those other series with you as well, and we also want to get your take on the Kasperi Kapanen trade to the Pittsburgh Penguins. But just, you know, sticking with, you know, the postponement of games the last couple of days and what's been happening in the sports world at a macro level, you know, we know that the Hockey Diversity Alliance has played a big role, along with the players, we should mention, in postponing the games on Thursday and Friday. But I know that you've seen, you know, the Hockey Diversity Alliance has come out with a pledge, and if you want to call them demands or things that they would like to see happen. In your opinion, when you're looking at those actionable items, what are the things that stand out to you that you would like to see, you know, in the short term here going forward with the NHL dealing with, you know, some of these huge social injustice issues?
Yeah, I think off the top, I think players like Evander Kane and Matt Dumba deserve a lot of credit for being at the forefront of this, and obviously their peers with the Hockey Diversity Alliance. But those two guys in particular have been sort of the face and the voice of this whole thing, of basically not taking no for an answer, whether it is Kane speaking out on social media about certain things, or Dumba. Obviously, he had that great speech to start the playoffs, and he's also been vocal about how the NHL always seems to be behind all the other sports in terms of taking action against certain social issues. So that's off the top. I think that group has been instrumental. I don't think we're at the point that we're at, which is really not that far down the road when you look at other sports. We're not there. We're not at the point right now without those guys and without their persistence and without their strong beliefs. So there's that. And I think that their demands are, it's one of those things where you try to put yourself in the shoes of the NHL, where they're being tabled with, you know, hey, we want to do X, Y, and Z. It's going to take some time for them to not only, you know, wrap their head around it and set the wheels in motion, but also do it right. So, I think this is what the Hockey Diversity Alliance has essentially said, is that, you know, they haven't really agreed upon anything. They haven't really, this is the league, they haven't really given us what we want, but they also aren't saying, like, the NHL is ignoring us, because I think that the NHL is probably taking their time, and that, I think that's the right approach. So I guess we can touch them maybe at the start of next season in terms of what they're willing to do, which of those issues that the Hockey Diversity Alliance are bringing forth that they're going to take them up on. So it'll be interesting, and it's a multitude of different things that the Alliance wants, and you know, one of them is, you know, use suppliers. So from what I gather, it's you know, whether it's food or equipment or whatever, using suppliers to the league that have, I believe it's 50% ownership of is black people. So that's another thing where it's like, okay, that sounds great on paper, but will they be able to find the right companies? Will they be able to come to the right agreements with those companies? Like, it's a very convoluted thing where you don't just snap your fingers and things are on the right track. So I think that they've come out guns a-blazing, so to speak, the Hockey Diversity Alliance, with a lot of demands, a lot of things that they want. And I think that's smart, because they have everyone's attention right now. So if you have things that you want done, you lay it all out there, and we'll see how much the NHL takes in and how much they absorb and how much they implement. So props to the Alliance, and I think it's now in the NHL's court in terms of, you know, how much of this are they willing to take part in? And you would think that it would be the vast majority or all of it.
Well, John, I got to segue back to hockey a little bit. But, you know, sticking with the NHL and their decision-making, what did you think of the penalties they levied against the Coyotes for the, you know, the what they did with the prospects? Did you think those were fair, you know, fines, the removal of the draft picks? And how big an impact is that going to have on that Arizona Coyotes franchise for years to come?
It's going to have a huge impact. Losing a first-rounder and a second-rounder when your team isn't exactly in the greatest state right now. First of all, the general manager that was at the center of these violations is gone. So people are left to pick up the pieces. They haven't drafted extremely well over the years, so it's not like they have this massive prospect pool that they can count on, and that these picks are a luxury. They need them. This is a team that needs a lot of things. So they're big fines. The thing about judging whether or not it was harsh or whether or not it was lenient, it's kind of difficult because we don't entirely know what happened. The NHL has been pretty tight-lipped about things. Coyotes haven't said much. We just know that they were violations in regards to testing prospects before the draft combine. You can't do that. You can't test them physically. We don't know if it was 20 players. We don't know what the extent of these tests were. So it's kind of hard to cast judgment, but it's certainly a punishment. It's not like the NHL went, we're going to take away a third rounder and we'll call it even. It's like, no, we're going to take your first rounder and then a second rounder, which is pretty significant. So I think it was a pretty good call by the NHL from what we know.
John Mattis is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. John is the national hockey writer for thescore.com. The playoffs resume in Toronto in about 35 minutes' time. The Lightning and the Bruins, game four of that series. 7-1 victory for the Lightning in game three, probably one of the more dominant efforts that we've seen in these playoffs thus far. John, who's the best team that you've seen either live or on television that's still remaining in these playoffs?
That's a very good question. It's very like kind of straight to the point. I like that because I think my answer, like if you're asking me on paper, it's Tampa, but I think what I've seen, it's Vegas. And even the game that they lost to Vancouver, they outplayed them. So, you know, they lose 5-2, but if you review the tape, yes, Vancouver's more opportunistic. Yes, their goalie was better, but the team that actually controlled play was Vegas. And so even the game that they lost, they didn't look so bad. They've just been so, I guess, dialed in and playing to their potential. They have a tremendous top six in forwards. They have, you know, definitely an above-average defense corps. I don't think that it's phenomenal, but what the one thing that the defense does so well is that they get the puck up to the forwards, and away they go. They're a team that really excels off the rush. They're a team that plays pretty good defense. So their playing style is really it really blends well with playoff hockey. They have some physicality. Their fourth line is pretty effective, even though it's guys who don't put up a ton of points. They keep the puck in the other team's zone a lot. And then obviously the major factor in all this is that they have two number one goalies, Marc-Andre Fleury and Robin Leonard. Obviously, Leonard has taken the net, and that's been a controversy in its own right. But there's something about Vegas. There's something about the makeup of that team. A lot of guys in their prime. A lot of guys that are in their early 30s, too. This is just very much their time as a group. So I like what I'm seeing from Vegas. I've liked, for the most part, what I've seen from Tampa. So if I were, you know, gun to my head to pick a Stanley Cup matchup, it'd probably be Tampa and Vegas, but I'm more sold on Vegas at this point.
Yeah, John, it's tough to argue with those two picks. I'd probably pick those two teams as well, maybe throw Colorado in there as well. But last question for you here. We have to ask you about the Kasperi Kapanen trade to the Pittsburgh Penguins. Obviously, Kapanen was drafted by the Penguins, and earlier this week, that was a big move because we definitely don't usually see big moves like that during the second round of the playoffs. But we're not going to name all the players that were involved because I think there were about 20 players involved. But basically, Toronto gets the first round pick, and they also get a couple of prospects. Philip Hallander was probably the best prospect out of the bunch that the Leafs got. But what was your impression on that trade? And more importantly, like, what is the other big move coming up from Kyle Dubas in your opinion? Do you think he might move out a significant forward, like say a William Nylander, or do you think that this is more so clearing up cap space to maybe go after a big free agent defenseman, like say Alex Pietrangelo?
Yeah, so the trade itself, I really liked it for Toronto. I didn't hate it for Pittsburgh, but if we can just focus on Toronto, they trade a guy who was essentially, not redundant, that's the wrong word, but he was playing on the third line, wasn't producing a whole lot, plays really north-south, super fast. His finishing is okay, and I'm talking about Kapanen here, obviously. They didn't really need him, and he makes 3-something. I think it's 3.2. So not getting a ton of value there. So the fact that he moved isn't a huge, isn't a huge blow to their lineup and their capability as a group. And they get some salary cap relief. They get a couple of prospects that may or may not turn into something down the road. And they get a first-round pick, and it's 15th overall. That's pretty good. So I liked it for Toronto, and I didn't hate it for Pittsburgh. Did it not make a ton of sense if you just look at it in a, you know, with tunnel vision in a vacuum where it's like, you know, X for Y? It seemed like a lopsided trade. But then you look at it from Jim Rutherford's perspective, where this is a guy who wants to continue to contend, that has guys like Sidney Crosby, Evgeny Malkin, Chris Letang, and that whole bunch, you know, really getting close to getting out of their primes and getting out of that window where they can be highly effective as a group. You got to make trades, and this guy's not afraid to do them. So if you quote-unquote lose the trade in the short term, but then we see them in the Cup final next year, you know, how does that trade actually look, right? So they're certainly taking a chance there, and I would assume that it's also not the first trade that Rutherford will make this summer. So I always try to put myself in the shoes of both GMs, because I think people like to pile on and people like to choose a winner and a loser right away after trade, and that's totally fine, but there's always a motive from both sides. So with Pittsburgh, they really want to take the opportunity here with their window closing and not leave any stone unturned, and I think Kapanen will help them out there. So the other part of your question about Kyle Dubas, the Toronto GM, and what he's going to do this summer, I don't think he's done whatsoever. I think he's got a little more flexibility here. He's got, like you mentioned, Alex Petrangelo becoming a free agent and having the allure of coming home and maybe taking a discount because of the flat cap. And maybe they give him, you know, some extra term or something like they did with John Tavares. So there's that factor, and there's also that lingering narrative of, you know, will they get tougher? Will they get stronger? Will they add capable defenders to their back end? I think that Dubas is certainly thinking about it. I think he's certainly asking around. It's a matter of, does he pull the trigger on moves that are maybe quote unquote counter to you know, his style of play and also their coach's style of play, Sheldon Keefe, and really being skill based and really being offensive. So I think we could possibly see Andreas Johnsson move, and that's not coming from anything that's sourced, but you look across the roster, and I don't think they're going to part with their big four forwards of Tavares, certainly not trading Austin Matthews. Mitch Marner is a possibility, but I don't think they're going to part ways with him. And the same can be said for William Nylander, whose contract actually is kind of a deal now. There's some good value there. So you start going past those guys, and you get to Johnsson and some other characters on the roster. So we'll see what happens there. They've certainly shown over the years that they're capable of being creative, whether it's taking on contracts and burying them, or, you know, signing bonuses, helping them acquire a free agent. So, as usual, Toronto's a team to watch in regards to the offseason.
John Mattis is the national hockey writer for thescore.com. John, always appreciate your time and insight. Thanks so much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Hey, have a great day, guys. Enjoy the hockey. Cheers.
Likewise, John. Take care. Thanks so much. When we come back, Claude Vilgrain, former NHL player, is going to join us to talk about his experience of playing in the league as being a person of color. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on your home of the Jets. TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.